present the News Quiz with your host, Miles Jupp.
Hello, and welcome to the News Quiz. We start with a cutting from the BBC News website, read by Neil Sleet.
A massive sinkhole has appeared on a street in St Albans, forcing the evacuation of several families from their homes in the night. Heavily pregnant Gemma Bagshaw, who's expecting to give birth any day now, said she was woken by the sound of the hole opening up.
Our thanks to everyone for sending that piece of mischief in. Now, let's meet the teams. Will you welcome first on my right, Hugo Rifkind and Holly Walsh. Opposite them, on my left, Terry Christian and Susan Kalman. This week, the News Quiz comes from the lovely Lyceum Theatre in Crewe. Or, to give the town its full name, Change at Crewe. Hugo, whose speech went right to the centre?
Right, well, this is presumably about the Conservative Party conference where I've been this week, where, as you might have read, things were made considerably more unpleasant by a small minority of shouting, spitting political extremists who hated everything. And one of them was Theresa May. She took quite a hard line on immigration. It's one of the first big speeches, pointing out how upsetting it can be for any community which has to absorb a vast influx of new people with completely alien values, which is probably something she'd learnt when she arrived in Manchester with a whole big-haired, braying, weird-shoed Tories like her. We had George Osborne the same day, championing his vision of the Northern Powerhouse, which always sounds like one of those sort of wrestlers you used to get on Saturday morning television.
I think it sounds like a club night at the Hacienda.
Well, it's Osborne's great idea to bring together the great cities of the North, such as Manchester, Leeds, Sheffield, Crewe, bring them all together as a competitor to London. So that went down about as well as you'd expect in Manchester from the Conservative Chancellor, George Osborne. And then on the last day, we had Cameron, and his speech, as you said in the question, it was all about shifting the Tories to the centre, with his view being now Corbyn's taken Labour to the left, and you've got UKIP on the right. He wants the Tories to sort of ride down the middle. Particularly, he wants them to be the party of social mobility, which, as he puts it very interestingly, he said was about rising from the bottom to the top, or even from the middle to the top. And I'm very interested in this idea of rising from the middle to the top, because I don't see why not. I think, you know, say you went to a minor public school, for example, there's no reason why you shouldn't dream of sending your children to a major public school. Or perhaps you've got a three-bed holiday home in the Cotswolds. What's wrong with one day hoping for a four-bed holiday home in the Cotswolds? And it's these kinds of everyday concerns, these sort of concerns of ordinary working people that Cameron's modern Conservatives are fighting for, because we are all in it together.
Yeah. I loved his speech, you know, when he launched his assault on poverty by taking more money off the poor. It's a bit like his assault on obesity. I'll be force-feeding fat people cream buns, won't it?
They got quite under attack. You were saying earlier about the protests that happened outside, the anti-austerity
protests. Oh, and them being nasty.
Yeah, and they were like, you know, there was people outside complaining that they couldn't feed their children and then throwing eggs and flour at people. That's the basics of pancakes.
See, to be fair, it is part of Manchester's tradition because, you know, obviously when the Duke of Wellington was a Tory Prime Minister, his train carriage got stoned. You know, he threw big rocks at it. So, really, it's progress, in a way.
That made me think of our Prime Minister getting stoned, but that's different, right?
Anyone see Osborne's speech?
Oh, I loved Osborne's speech. I love that he was talking about everything that everyone loves talking about, like business rates. Pretty sexy subject. And, you know, they used to use sort of phrases that you go, I'm not sure what that means, and then you work it out. Like, he's the sort of person who would say, well, we're not reducing benefits, we're making them bijou. Or, like, a homeless person isn't homeless, they've now got extensive outdoor space.
For me, the problem is that Theresa May, George Osborne, Boris Johnson, they were essentially leadership speeches. They're all just jockeying for position for who's going to take over. when Cameron goes, and the worst thing he ever did was say he was going to go, because now every Conservative Party conference is essentially an audition for the leadership of the Conservative Party.
Fighting like ferrets in a sack, aren't they?
Yeah.
That's the least Tory analogy I can think of.
But it did sort of show all the speeches, the way it was, this whole kind of thing of the Tories that they're going to be the party of working people and they're going to be the party of immigrants and of social mobility and of race equality. And it's just like, they can say anything. I mean, just because there's basically no Labour Party. You know, I mean, it's like, I know Corbyn's meant to be famed for his integrity and his approachability and all that, but he's not really doing a great job. I mean, you look at how that week went, you look at Cameron's speech and the sort of the open goals in it, that how you're going to bring about social mobility when you've just announced this sort of massive cuts in tax credits, or not announced, just about to bring them in. And I mean, and you've got Labour, all Corbyn's only response to his speech was, he was a bit mean to me. You know, I mean, it's like, they might as well have the party led by a bit of blue tack rolled in hair. It's just rubbish.
Hugo, can I ask a question? Because you're at the conference. You know all the standing ovations?
Yeah.
Does someone kind of give a signal? Or is that a genuinely natural response to the charisma that is David Cameron?
No, they'll stand up for anything. And in fact, if you sit in that hall and you're a journalist and you don't stand up, people are kind of looking daggers at you. It happens to all of them. It's terrible. They're all sincere. They really are. But one of the reasons, actually, why this party conference season has been more interesting than most is because all the journalists covering it aren't exhausted, because no one had to go to the Liberal Democrat Party conference. Because there's only three of them. And normally, by the time you get to the end of the Tories being the last one, except for the SNP, you've got all these hacks who've been on the road for 5 weeks, for 6 weeks. You know, they're turning up in their dressing gowns with sort of thermoses and sort of smoking in the front, whereas this time they were all still relatively fresh.
They're talking about not breaking next year for the Lib Dem conference, aren't they? Have you heard this?
What do you mean, not breaking?
Not breaking Parliament for it, that they'll just keep going.
Well, they'll just do it in the canteen, sort of thing.
Yeah. I just think that's
have a slightly longer lunch one day.
Inevitably and scintillatingly, this is about the latest escapades of Prime Minister and walking porcine punchline David Cameron, who addressed the Conservative Party conference this week. At the start of the conference, large numbers of protesters gathered outside the conference hall. I have to say, when you see these guys hurling missiles and screaming abuse, it makes you realise how much they could achieve if they used that energy to embrace the world of opportunities available to them in the workplace. And our thanks to Ian Duncan Smith for sending that one in. Home Secretary Theresa May, filling the much-coveted Rivers of Blood slot, made an... made an uncompromising speech in which she pledged an immigration crackdown. Her speech proved a little controversial, in much the same way that the Holocaust is a bit of a sensitive topic. 2 points to Hugo. Susan, who's Afghan and done it again?
This is the bombing of the Medecins Sans Frontières hospital in Afghanistan. Now, the facts of the case are that a hospital was bombed by the Americans with loss of life, lots of injuries, and the organisation itself are calling for an inquiry into what happened. And the interesting thing was the United States' reaction to this, which was, to me, a clear indication that President Obama and his advisers are great fans of Just a Minute. Because they managed to explain what happened to the hospital without deviation, repetition, or hesitation. Because they described that one incident, which could be described as a war crime. Let's say the topic is war crimes, as Nicholas Parsons cheerily narrates across. They described it as collateral damage, a tragic accident, the responsibility of the Afghan government, and finally, a mistake. Of course, there was some repetition, because let's face it, they have done this before. And Obama has now said, yes, it was a mistake. Now, I once used chili oil that I'd bought at a farmer's market in the shower. That was a mistake. Bombing a hospital and killing 22 people is not really a mistake.
Now, the Russians have had a very different attitude to aerial bombardment this week.
They're bombing everything. I mean, they're just sort of starting wars all over the place, aren't they? Their endeavours in Syria are one of the most sort of cynical, fake, mendacious conflicts since the last war we started, really. I mean, basically, what they're doing is they are bombing Syria quite thoroughly, quite brutally, claiming they're bombing ISIS and, in fact, bombing everybody who isn't Assad, which sort of leads to the very exciting prospect that they might be bombing the people who we're working with and we might be bombing the people they're working with. And that's totally how World War III starts in all the crap novels I read as a teenager.
Yeah. Did you see the story about the newsreader?
Oh, the weather forecast.
He was doing the weather forecast and then said, the weather is over Syria is perfect for bombing.
Of course, the solution for Obama or anyone, as we all know, and Obama should take a leaf out of Tony Blair's book, because all you need to do is just appoint someone, maybe a civil servant, to do an inquiry over something that's happened. And then about 6 or 7 years later, everyone will still be going, where was that inquiry? I've forgotten about it. Let's all just move on.
Well, bleakly, this is the US bombing of a hospital in the Afghan city of Kunduz, a hospital controlled by Medecins Sans Frontières, which translates as Doctors Without Borders, although in this case it's more a case of doctors without seemingly any protection under international law. The big question is whether it's a war crime, because there are strict definitions of what constitutes a war crime. It has to be a grave breach of the Geneva Conventions, it has to run contrary to the statutes of the International Criminal Court, and this is crucial, it has to not be committed by the United States of America. Terry, have a listen to this.
Do you hear the people sing, singing the song of angry men? It is the music of a people who will not be slaves again. When
lovely stuff, simply not heard enough. Terry,
Les Miserables, is it that?
Indeed, yeah. So who has been ripped off by their own employees?
Oh, this is the Air France workers, isn't it?
That's right, yeah, this is the story that some rather unhappy Air France workers ripped the shirts off the back of some of their bosses.
I love them. I love the French. Is that not a good thing? I do a kind of admire. I think that they're actually much better than us at being a mob, aren't they? Basically, they kind of grabbed hold of, was it some HR bloke and some management bloke and sort of stripped them naked and all the rest of it. In some ways, it could have been like the end of a One Direction concert, couldn't it? Only with more garlic and violence. I've always admired the French. Well, you know, my dad was a trade unionist, but for me, there wasn't enough aggro, you know, Transport and General Workers Union. And while I don't condone violence, and in no way do the BBC condone it either... You know, if every time some lickspittle human resources bloke announced massive job cuts, he was scared that he might end up being lynched, that'd be great. No, because it would add some truth. I don't mean it in a spiteful way. I think it would add some truth to that slice of managerial bull when they come out with, you know, this is difficult for us as well. Well, damn right it is, mate. Get your kit off. Or I'll give you a group kicking.
It may be that the lynching could have a sort of team bonding aspect to it. Well, that's brought everyone together, hasn't it? That's probably...
I loved that there was Hollande's response to this, was he said, these protests are damaging the image of France. And it's like, what do you think the image of France is?
I mean, what I like about the French as well is... Unlike us, it's like the French government are actually scared of the people, whereas, like, with us and the Americans, the people are scared of the government, aren't they?
Yeah. I'm not
and
sure.
And I quite like that being flipped on its head. I like the fact that they kick off when something that they don't like happens. Well, we just sort of moan about it, don't we, in the pub?
Oh, dear.
Oh, God. Yeah.
I'm not sure if you should lead the revolution, Terry, but I certainly think you should narrate it. Arrestingly, oui, vraiment, this is the story of two Air France executives who literally had the shirts pulled from their backs as they ran from a mob of striking workers after discussions designed to prevent 2,900 job losses, I think it's fair to say, broke down. These events had the whole of France in an uproar, with the country divided between those who support the workers and those who deplore the damage done to some presumably impeccable tailoring. The half-naked executives had to run through the mob and then climb over a chain-link fence to escape, a format that has been snapped up by ITV for its winter schedule. And which will hopefully be hosted by Holly Willoughby, fingers very much crossed. It's very upsetting, though, really. The only people who should be climbing perimeter fences in France are foreign nationals at Calais, desperate to reach this country and the warm, welcoming embrace of Theresa May. President Hollande said he was worried the protests would harm France's image abroad, but we can reassure him that we will continue to think of his countrymen as a great bunch of lads and not a load of roll-neck-wearing Gaulois-smoking layabouts who like to go home at 3 o'clock in the afternoon and only really snap into action with a chance of surrendering to the Germans. Holly, who might be walking away from the wounded?
I'm assuming this is the story about the British Medical Association has had a huge rise in membership, am I right? Is this the right story?
Absolutely, ballpark, yeah.
Oh, great. Well, they've had a huge rise in membership, particularly from young doctors, and they think it's because of this, the government's proposals that doctors should be paid less and work more hours. And I have to say, I am definitely on the side of the doctors here, because next month I am I'm giving birth and I don't want the person delivering my baby to be more stressed and exhausted than I am. I think it's incredible, though, because it just doesn't help the NHS if you run your doctors into the ground. I mean, like, imagine going to hospital and being told there isn't a bed because a young doctor has exhaustion in it. That's... But also, doctors have to do a lot of work. They have to work. They're never off. You're never off duty as a doctor. I mean, like, if you're in a restaurant and somebody starts choking, as a doctor, it's your responsibility to go over and treat them. It's the Hippocratic Oath. And you don't get there with any other career. You're not in a restaurant and someone's really struggling with splitting the bill three ways. And then they're like, is there an accountant in the house?
The NHS is, I think most people are agreed, is a glorious jewel of tremendousness. And I think sometimes, though, it's only when you actually have to use the NHS you're reminded of how wonderful it is. So last month, I got a large shard of metal embedded in my eye. Not because I have a lathe or anything. I don't do metal work. It just blew into my eye.
From
just,
where?
It just blew into my eye from the street.
Is it quite gusty where you live?
Well, the streets of Glasgow streets just got loads of razor blades.
Actually, how large? Like a spear?
Actually, preconception, it was Edinburgh, to be fair. Before everyone starts going on about Glasgow being this messy place, it was Edinburgh.
So a more expensive metal.
Yes, it was.
A more pretentious one.
It was, I waited a week to go to the eye hospital because I was busy, and I don't like
now,
to bother.
Eye hospital, is that what you call
the eye hospital?
A normal hospital in eye hospital?
No.
Is this quite bad, doctor? Am I going to need to see someone a bit more serious? Eye hospital?
Can I just say, the idea of you in a little patch is the most adorable thing I've ever thought of.
Well, I had to wander around with an eye patch on.
Like a pirate?
Well, I drew a pirate thing on it. So... I went to the Glasgow Eye Hospital with the... I didn't realise it was a shard of metal at the time. I just thought I had something in my eye and I was too busy and I didn't want to bother anybody. And I was in the waiting room and I started getting incredibly upset because there were a lot of people there with quite bad eye. And I started going, oh, I'm an idiot. I've left it too long to get the scene to. And I started, slightly weeping in the waiting room. And the doctor came out and saw me and she just leaned towards me and went, word on the street is you've got something in your eye. Let's get that sorted. And I went, oh my God, you're Batman. You are the best person. And then she just took she went, yeah, you've got a bit of metal in your eye. And she just went, stay calm, and took a large needle, pointed out my eye. In and out, half an hour, absolutely fantastic. Took out and went, yeah, it's a big bit of metal, you got that. And I said it was an Edinburgh, and she went, yeah. So, and it was amazing and remarkable and beautiful. And I think sometimes we talk about the NHS as this thing, and then when you use it, you go, God, this is the most remarkable thing that we have in this country. It's...
If you had to save one of the NHS or the BBC, Susan, which would it be?
Well.
I hope this is a hypothetical question. We could be voting on this in six months.
Eye hospital or eye player?
Yeah, so I think after the Great British Bake Off, which the majority of the country watched, I would save both of them.
Hippocratically, these are the latest proposals from Health Secretary and technocratic nodding dog made flesh, Jeremy Hunt. According to an online poll of more than 6,000 trainee doctors, three-quarters of respondents say they will leave their jobs if changes to their contracts go ahead. Although, quite honestly, if these people can come off a 72-hour shift and still have the energy to fill in a survey, then the NHS may not be working them hard enough. In a separate poll carried out by The Times, 95% of junior doctors were in favour of strike action, during which time, presumably, we'll just have to look up the symptoms online and do our best with a hot needle. Alternatively, you could turn up to hospital with a bleeding chest wound and find no one there to treat you, only a rather confused cleaner named Alison. The government reassure us, however, that under those circumstances, Alison will be absolutely prepared to have a good go. Some have come out to defend the plans. It seems perfectly sensible to make Saturdays not part of the weekend, given what a famously quiet time they are in accident and emergency departments, said a paralytically drunk man with a traffic cone up his bottom. Before picking up his stethoscope and carrying on with his shift. Jeremy Hunt's suspicions that he's unpopular amongst doctors were confirmed only last week when he went to his GP with a cold and was prescribed a six-month course of daily enemas. To be performed by an incredibly angry nurse with extremely cold hands and no depth perception. Points to Holly. And at the end of round one, the scores are Hugo and Holly have 5 and Terry and Susan have 4. We start round two with a cutting from the Whitewell Holiday Park website.
The following evening entertainment is available at the Holiday Park. Monday night, music, and Tuesday night, bingo. Please note that bingo is subject to numbers.
Thanks to Marion Kampf in Lantwit Major for sending us that. Hugo, why is life too short to report?
Right, there's this number you're meant to call for non-emergencies when you want to contact the police. For emergencies, you call 999. If it's not an emergency, you're meant to call 101. Of course, no one knows this because no one's ever done it, but that is what you're meant to do. But there was a top policeman in Cambridgeshire this week, Inspector Matt Johnson. He said in a public meeting, this is what you're meant to do, but life's too short. which has caused some alarm among the public. And the problem is, quite a lot of people do use this number, but up to 1 million calls each year are not answered. And some callers wait for more than an hour to get through. Most don't. Most are answered within about 20 seconds. And there's a bit on the police website where they're very proud, saying most calls are answered within 20 seconds. But they don't say what happens after they answer them. You know, whether nothing happens or whether whoever's on the other line just repeats your query back in a squeaky voice.
I called 101. I called it the other day because my cat got locked in a disused police station. It's the most Scooby-Doo crime of all time.
Sorry, how did you know the cat was in the disused police station? Did it call you?
Wait, did a dog come and tell you?
Yeah. I've only ever phoned 999 once, and it was quite a dramatic... There was some smoke in my flat, something might have been on fire. And it is that... If you've never done it before, it's quite a nerve-wracking thing to phone 999. It's a big thing. And so the flat was filling with smoke, and I said to the wife, do you think we should phone? And she said, I think it's probably at the stage we should... Genuinely standing going, well, I think we probably should just now. I think we should. So she phoned the fire brigade, 999, 2 fire engines, all that kind of stuff. The flat was...
Sorry, what noise do fire engines...
That's what they do in Glasgow.
Did you phone dolphins?
12 firemen ran up the stairs, these hunky young men. It was the neighbour just burning, so it was fine. We've solved the problem for you. And they stood there all impressed, and then they saw 3 cats and us in sensible shoes and thought, oh, no, what a waste.
I phoned the police in Peckham one night when the... I could see people climbing over the walls. There's an old school near us, and they would climb over the walls. And I was in the bathroom, and I could look out the window, I could see them, and I rang, and said, hello, there's people climbing over the walls. And they came out, and they were like plainclothes people outside, and they were signalling to police helicopters and stuff, and it was quite exciting. But at the same time, I was quite frightened because there were people climbing over walls and things like that. And so I was slightly heightened tension about it, and they went, don't worry, there's another squad car coming up. Another squad car pulled up, and the guy got out, and he went, hey, Bellamore! It's 1 o'clock in the morning and I've rung you because people are trying to get into the house. The last thing I don't really have time for you to run through my early CV. You know what I mean? Evidentially, this is Inspector Matt Johnson from Cambridgeshire Police, who told a public meeting that they shouldn't bother trying to ring the police's non-emergency 101 number, as life is too short, adding an existential niche and angle to what had previously been quite a dull discussion about whether it was foxes or badgers knocking over the bins. Some callers have waited over an hour for their 101 call to be answered, by which point they're able to report that their suspicions have been confirmed and that the man loitering outside their neighbour's house was indeed a burglar, and it transpires a very efficient one who's rounded off his visit by stealing their caravan. 2 points to Hugo. Holly, where are shoppers no longer getting carried away?
This is the big news that in England, because of course it's always already happened in Scotland and Wales, that we will be being charged 5p for plastic bags from now on, with certain caveats, unless you're buying chicken, sharp blades and instruments. It's a real trigger word for a Glaswegian, isn't it? What, the idea of a sharp instrument?
Just the idea of going into a shop and going, just the chicken and a knife. That's so, no, nothing else, I'm done, thanks.
You've got to carve it, Susan. It's perfectly practical.
What else is there? Seeds and nuts, that all goes in. Any kind of pills or prescription drugs, you can get a bag full of these things. But everything else, you have to pay 5p. This is great news for me to find out that plastic bags are 5p because I've got about 200 of them stuffed down the side of my fridge, and that is now my pension plan.
There was an article in one of the papers, and it was saying, dodge this 5p tax by taking your own bag. And it's like, yes, that is the point. Yeah.
In the old days, there was actually shopping bags, weren't there? So you have one for the greengrocer, always have bits of, like, you know, kind of dust off the potatoes in the bottom of it, one for the green groceries and one for the thingy. And it used to be embarrassing having to go to the shop for your mum. Mm-hmm. Sounds like I'm from the Dickensian period. My mum was terrible. She used to send you to the butchers and say, you tell that butcher that stewing meat last week was horse meat. And the butcher would say, what's your mother said this week? And you're being a big kid.
In a way, it's quite sort of depressing, this story, because it is about saving the environment, you know. It's like there is a reason why they're doing it. It's not just a fun thing to raise more taxes. It's almost as if, sort of, you know, the world has said to the population at large, look, you have to stop using these or the planet are going to die. Turtles are going to have them wrapped around their faces and your children are going to be poisoned by the toxic sea and we'll have to burn them and the planet will run out of air. And everyone's like, yeah, whatever. It's like, look, we'll give you 5p. And it's like, ooh, I'm in.
Yeah. One thing I would say that I'm glad about that happened in Scotland was that I was able to use... I have a tartan shopping trolley. And I'm not ashamed of it. I am often surprised I'm not on BBC Three more often. But I have a tartan shopping trolley.
Can you fit inside it?
I can, yes. I can. Do you know, that was the first thing my wife and I tried.
when you bought it?
It's just nice to be able to have a tartan shopping trolley and not feel smug and go, yeah, well, laugh if you like, but I'm not paying 5p.
They're worried that people are going to start nicking baskets. That's one of the big concerns.
Well, they're doing really well out of it, the wire basket making industry. They're one of the this week's big successes.
Or as you call it, a hamper.
Maybe during my early career I did.
The flip side of this, though, is all the bags for life you have to get. You know, the canvas ones. I mean, I spent a couple of months up in Scotland the other year, and I kept forgetting my plastic bags and my bag for life. And so I ended up, you know, at the end of 2 months, I had like 8 bags for life, and I've now got to live a really long time.
Yeah, well, I used to have one of those Sainsbury's bags. I had an elephant on the side, and then on the elephant it said, I'm big and sturdy. But the elephant's eyes, two big circles. I used to read it together. I thought the bag said, ooh, I'm big and sturdy.
Tesco's one, and I had it for a long time, and it said every little helps on the side, but the E got scratched off, and it just said very little helps.
Spuriously, this is the 5p charge on plastic bags introduced across the United Kingdom from Monday. No word on how this will affect the amount you tip the checkout girl, which I'm sure was common practice the last time I did my own shopping in 2004. It has been estimated that the 60 billion plastic bags used in the past decade have done almost as much damage to the environment as my auntie's Volkswagen Passat TDI. There are many exemptions to the rule. For example, you will get a plastic bag if you're buying loose seeds, raw meat or live fish. And plastic bags will continue to be given out by retailers on trains. This is serendipitous due to the large amounts of grain, mince and still thrashing pollock still sold on the West Coast mainline. Prescription medicines will be presented in a free plastic bag to preserve patient confidentiality, which may or may not have already been compromised by the pharmacist repeatedly shouting, "Maureen, where's the bum cream?" There's also an exemption for axes, knives and razor blades on the very sensible grounds that if someone is standing at a checkout brandishing an axe, it would be something of an imprudent time to ask them for 5p for a carrier bag. Two points to Holly. Terry, where isn't there a scrum for tickets?
Oh, yes. Well, this is rugby, isn't it? Is that what we're talking about
here?
Yeah. What a good guess. Right. And that's because it's the Rugby World Cup, yeah?
Correct.
Just guide me a bit here, because I'm not an aficionado, you know, on the game of rugby. You know, sort of egg chasing, the rest of it. You're going to see it as a kind of inverted snobbery, aren't you? And it is. Right. Because what I'm saying is that if William Webb Ellis, who invented rugby, had gone to a state school and he picked the ball up and started running with it, handball, free kick. At a public school, because they're so flooded, aren't they, with self-regard and self... It's like, I say, Webb Ellis has invented a new game. Well done, old chap. But it does seem to me that the whole England fiasco, you know, because England are out of the World Cup, and a lot of the blame is being laid at the doors of Sam Burgess and Owen Farrell, and they're both a bit too northern, aren't they, in rugby league. I bet they've got hardly any Latin and no Greek whatsoever, so no wonder the line-outs are going all right.
Yeah. I'd just like to say I'm quite enjoying the Rugby World Cup. For once, Scotland might have a chance of not being awful. You have no idea how glorious that is us as a country.
There is this immense confusion when the first round finishes, and it's like, what? There's more.
Yeah, you know, we're not used to. I love rugby. It is my favourite of all of the sports, apart from darts and snooker. And
what about golf?
Yeah, I quite like that as well.
Oh, God, I'm dying.
I think we'd already established, Terry, we were never going to get married. So I think it's okay that we disagree on a couple of things. I love rugby. I think the World Cup's been smashing. Hopefully people in England will still keep watching. I love a rolling maul. That is my favourite moment in the game. Do you like a rolling maul?
I thought that was a cooking term.
a rolling maul. Scotland used to be incredibly good at the rolling maul.
What is a rolling maul?
Well, basically...
Don't tell. Demonstrate.
So I've got that.
Do you need me for this?
Do you need me
for this?
Yeah, come on. Right. Google, come on.
Right. If you're listening on the radio, press your red button. I think it.
Sorry. I'm 80% sure that's how I got pregnant. England-Uruguay game, people might... I'm still going to watch it, and hopefully England will do well. I think there is a misconception that people in Scotland don't want England to succeed, and that is wrong, because I do want England to do well. It's just a shame you've not.
But really, you know, England are out of the World Cup. You know, the World Cup's in England. I mean, in a way, I think we should just cancel it now. You know what I mean? Everybody go home. The party's over.
Sportingly, this is the news that tickets to England's match against Uruguay are going cheap after England crashed out of the Cup following their defeat to Australia. Tickets that were originally priced at up to £250 are now changing hands in return for a dozen eggs or the promise of a lift.
Uruguay themselves have had a disappointing World Cup, although some pundits suggest not as hard as their 1972 season, where they suffered an injury crisis when their plane crashed in the Andes and they had to survive by eating each other, which in the world of rugby union has been a sin bin offence since 1996. ITV alone could lose up to £1 million per match in advertising revenues as viewing figures drop off. ITV were already having trouble with the World Cup coverage, with much of their usual audience being utterly perplexed that they can't ring in to vote off the team they like the least. Scotland and Wales are still in it, and presumably if they win, everyone can claim any success they achieve as their own. That is, after all, how the United Kingdom works. 2 points to Terry. As we're in crew, this is going to be a special round. The producer wanted to call it the Cruise Quiz, but I thought a better title would be a light-hearted yet thoroughly topical roundup of the latest goings-on in crew and its environs up to and not excluding Nantwich. Well, all aboard. We've got buzzers for this round. I should just warn the more sedentary members of the audience not to be alarmed, and for heaven's sake, don't shout bingo. So, everyone, fingers on buzzers? OK, right then, some local stories. Who is telling students exactly where to go? Hugo.
Is this the new sign at the railway station?
Sign?
Z.
Signs.
Signs. Yes. Is this the new signs at the railway station that advertise a university with students?
I want to interrupt. Not a university. Manchester Metropolitan University. Or, as it used to be known, Manchester Poly. Now, I'll have you know that I'm a regular lecturer on the film and media course there.
Well, how come you didn't press the buzzer?
If I'd have attended Manchester University rather than the Metropolitan University, I probably would have understood the question a lot better.
There's a sign, I remember, at Cambridge railway station that says, "Welcome to Cambridge, home of Anglia Polytechnic University." And you're like, yeah, well, famously.
Lots and lots of signs have gone up the Cruise Station. They've sponsored lots and lots of signs. Manchester Metropolitan University have installed 100 new signs at Cruise Station. And jolly exciting it is too. Someone got some points there, probably. OK, fingers on buzzers time. Again, why have the last 25 years bypassed in a flash? Ooh, Susan. Susan first, come on now.
This is the story of the week. It is the 25th anniversary, ladies and gentlemen, of the Haslington Bypass! Feel the emotion in the room. Personally, I love a road. I like maps, I like looking at roads. I have a favourite road. I don't know if anyone else has a favourite road. My favourite road, apart from the Haslington Bypass, is the M8 in Glasgow. And I love it because sometimes the locals do funny things. For example, I was driving along the M8 on the day that Harry Potter was released, one of the last Harry Potters. And on the morning it was released, someone had, on a bed sheet, written, "Dumbledore dies." From a bridge on the M8 so that everyone driving past could see it. That's when roads are fun.
I was trying to work out what you give a bypass for its 25th birthday. I mean, you can't give it flowers, it'll just like an accident black spot.
Okay. Well, parochially, this is the news, and I use the word in the most affectionate sense, that Manchester Metropolitan University have sponsored 100 new signs at Crewe Station, and jolly useful signs they are too. It's amazing how many times you step off a train and think, now where around here can I lay my hands on a seat of higher learning? The Manchester Metropolitan University website says our Cheshire campus is a creative, cultural and social melting pot with student actors, artists and musicians rubbing shoulders with sports scientists, business and humanities students. In brief, a void. Although there are some excellent lectures there, I believe. This week is also the 25th anniversary of the Haslington Bypass. You probably saw the parades and the Spitfire flypast and... Of course, I'm sure you've all purchased the commemorative coin. Of course, we all remember 1990, the reunification of Germany, the release of Nelson Mandela, the opening of the Haslington Bypass.
Hindsight only makes it less clear which of these was the most important. Before we reveal the final scores, has anybody got a cutting that they'd like to share? Hugo.
Yes, this is an advert from Richmond-on-Thames Freecycle, and it's been sent in by Simon in St Margaret's. And it reads, "Wanted, horse to shoot at." And it goes on, "Hi, I'm a member of the Chessington Bowmen, and we are looking for a horse for the archers to shoot at for the Battle of Agincourt anniversary on the 25th of October. We've got a full-size man in foam, which we will dress as a French armoured knight, but he could do with a horse for us to shoot at. So, if anyone has any good ideas of where to get such a beast, or can supply an animal which would be soft enough to accommodate arrows, I'd appreciate any help. Even technical advice, many thanks."
Holly.
This is from Andrew Christie from the parish notice at High Church Hilton Aberdeen. It says, "You are invited to a fashion show and evening tea on Tuesday the 1st of September at 7:30 in the church. Tickets priced £12 are available from members of the social committee. See posers for more details."
Terry.
I don't know why, this one just tickled me and it appealed to my domestic side. And it's from the BBC Good Food website and it was sent by Robert Emrys Jones and it's a tip. Paprika. If you can't get hold of tinned tomatoes with paprika, just use a can of plain chopped tomatoes and add a pinch... I'm going to do that.
Susan.
This was found in the Simply Worthing magazine. It was sent in by lots of people. Classical singer Russell Watson has soared to great highs in his career, but has also experienced terrible lows. He's performing in Worthing.
Thank you, and now let us take a look at the final score. Hugo and Holly have 11, but Terry and Susan have 12. Don't shrug and say whatever, Hugo. A great deal of care has gone into those points. They're a very, absolutely integral part of the show. Before we leave you, here is a cutting from the Camden New Journal, sent in by Non Shaw.
Thinking of having varicose vein surgery? Join us on Tuesday, the 6th of October, for a varicose vein opening evening.
And with that, from crew, goodbye!
Taking part in the news quiz were Hugo Ripkin, Holly Walsh, Terry Christian and Susan Kalman. In the chair was Miles Jupp and the news was read by me, Neil Sleeks. The chair's script was written by Lucy Clark, James Kettle and Benjamin Partridge, with additional material by Liam Byrne and Harry Swisscanther. The producer was Richard Morris and it was a BBC radio comedy production.